Without doubt, I'm without drought. How else could a spit out bout SWAT at-bats without outs? Rain delay. What's that I came to say? That's Lupe Fiasco. I'm Blake Murphy. This is Jays Talk Plus. We are not rain shortened today. In fact, we were supposed to be off yesterday and kind of got rain extended because the Blue Jays went 3 hours and 38 minutes between the start of a rain delay and the cancellation of the game, hopped on with Shoali on rain delay, Jays Talk, whatever we would call a program like that, for a little bit to talk about the five innings that were, and of course, the game before, which included the debut of Addison Barger. We'll touch on some of that today since we didn't have a full show yesterday. We do have a very fun Dodgers series to tee up as well. Shohei Ohtani is here. Steven Nelson, voice of the Dodgers, is joining us a little later in the show. For the first half of the show, though, we're going to talk about your Toronto Blue Jays, who have lost three in a row, who have lost four of five, who are back down to 500. And once again, we come away thinking, oh, they probably squandered an opportunity there. In this case, the weather conspired against them, I guess. John Schneider was not particularly happy with the cancellation of that game, saying that the field condition by the time they canceled it was no worse than what they had had to play through to get through five innings to make the game official. Anyway, the game gets canceled. The Jays lose 2-1. Jose Berríos pitches pretty well, hangs one slurve to Sally Perez for a two-run home run, and that's the difference. At least the bullpen's fresh for this weekend since he only went five innings. On the offensive side, there's one kind of missed opportunity there where the Jays get one in and have two on with only one out, but Varsho and Alejandro Kirk both pop up just outside the infield in Varsho's case and in the infield in Kirk's case. So another missed opportunity. Let's bring in Jonah Birenbaum of The Score to talk about it. Jonah, thanks for coming on. Looking good, buddy. How we doing?
I'm doing great, brother. I love the new glasses. I feel at least partially responsible for inspiring that look, but in any event, looking great, pal.
Probably misses his old glasses. That's going to be, if I have a bad show, that's what we're going to chalk it up to. Thank you. Okay, so that game gets called yesterday. Obviously, the Blue Jays don't like it because they're the team trailing after five innings. None of us were there. None of us are professional groundskeepers. But, you know, when you hear John Schneider's comments after the game, basically saying like, well, we played through worse conditions to get the five innings in. Why couldn't we continue? What do you make of that? How do you feel about it? Or is this kind of just sitting on the Jays for not taking care of what should be a lesser team over the first five innings there?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously an expression of frustration from a manager who has once again watched his offense utterly fail to provide sufficient run support for a starter who pitched really, really effectively. But moreover, like the way that the rain delay ultimately was handled, I think even to an outside observer was questionable. You know, Chris Guccione, the crew chief, balked at initially bringing out the tarp for some inexplicable reason. It was clear that the field was in disrepair. It was clear that the rain wasn't going to stop, and yet he held off on bringing out the tarp initially after it seemed like they were going to bring it out, and then, you know, just allowed rain to continue to pelt the field and ultimately do even more damage that I guess was irretrievable in the umpiring crew's eyes. But yeah, I mean, I think fundamentally that's John Schneider just being disappointed that, you know, his road trip ended with such a dispiriting kind of finish and that he once again had to watch, you know, his team take a loss despite his pitching staff holding an opponent to three runs or less. As a matter of fact, in four games in Kansas City, his pitching staff allowed no more than three runs. They went 1-3 in those four games against the Royals, which I think is pretty emblematic of how the season has gone. And it's understandable that John Schneider would be frustrated at the rain, at his offense, at everything in between.
Yeah, it is absolutely frustrating. And again, you know, there were four more innings to play in that game. But I also, you know, you see the world we live in now where the Blue Jays tweet out that the game's canceled and all the replies are about, well, I had the Jays money line, et cetera. Bet the five inning line, you simpletons. But no, this Jays offense can't score. And who's to say that they were going to score over the next four innings? Certainly the performance of the last couple weeks would suggest they haven't. This is an aside, not related to the Blue Jays, but you played Canadian college baseball. You play men's fastball still. My baseball experience is primarily slow pitch related, where you will play in such bad conditions if there is cold beer that you can just slide. There was one time in Cambridge where the entire right-handed hitter's batter's box was just a puddle. So we just slid the board over from over the plate into the batter's box. We just played on a misaligned field a little bit because you got to get the game in. What is the worst field conditions you've played in your kind of, we'll call it semi, yeah, we'll call it amateur career, but what are the worst conditions you've played in?
Capital A amateur. As a matter of fact, 2 seasons ago for our championship game, which was in September.
This is in the Toronto Men's League that you play in?
This is in the Toronto Men's Baseball League. My Dodgers, my erstwhile Dodgers, I've since been traded to the Tigers. We made it to the championship in spite of ourselves, I would say. So we had to take 2 of 3 because we were the lower seeded team in the championship matchup. And we were playing on a lake. I was playing shortstop and I was swimming. It was outrageous. Any ball that was hit on the ground in the infield, which was a grass infield, was just immediately gobbled up. It stopped moving. It didn't even make it to the cutout because the field was so waterlogged. But in spite of that, the Dodgers won the first game of that series and won the second game. We were champions. We were drenched, but we were, just as drenched in glory, I would say.
Yeah, well, hell yeah. I came out to some of those Dodgers games, not the championship games, but on the way there. One last silly note for you before we talk about the actual offensive issues here. So Jose Berríos gets credit with a complete game, throwing 5 innings. The Blue Jays got one complete game last year from Chris Bassitt. It was a proper complete game. Before that, you'd have to go back to 2021 when Hyunjin Ryu had a 7-inning complete game in one of those doubleheader days where we were only playing 7 innings. Then you have to go all the way back to Marcus Stroman for Blue Jays complete games. However, there was one game just like this in 2019 where the game got called after 4.5 innings and the Blue Jays were the losers in this game. And the starting pitcher that day got credited with a complete game despite only going 4 innings. Do you remember who that pitcher was?
Oh my goodness. 2019. Those were some dark days, man. Forgettable days. Who was the starting pitcher?
There's almost no, if you don't get it immediate, there's almost no chance. He only made 2 appearances as a Blue Jay.
Brett Anderson.
Ryan Feraband.
Wow. Wow. Is it the knuckleballer?
I mean, I guess I have no recollection of Ryan Feraband really, but he went 4 innings, wow. Gave up 4 earned on 7 hits. With a home run, got credited with the complete game. The Jays lost that one in 4.5 innings. So it does get worse than yesterday.
Apparently that's you really dug deep to unearth that one, and I applaud you for it.
Yeah, basically I was like, is this, I knew Bassitt had one last year, but I had a suspicion that maybe this was the only other complete game since the Stroman era, but I had forgotten about the Ryu 7-inning on one half of the doubleheader there. Okay, so the Jays don't come through offensively. They only really threatened at one point in that game. It was in the 4th inning. They get a big leadoff double, or not leadoff, but a one-out double from Turner. Davis Schneider takes a walk. Ernie Clement, if there was any good fortune in this game, it's that he had a couple foul flares just out of the reach of outfielders, kept him alive for a flare single. That scored a run. He'd eventually steal second base. So you've got guys on second and third, only one out here. You end up coming with a pop out to second base just beyond the infield for Dalton Varsho, and then a pop out to first base for Alejandro Kirk. I think we can forgive Dalton Varsho at this point, but Alejandro Kirk off to a pretty bad start here offensively, and that has been particularly noticeable the last handful of games in big spots, in spots with runners on base. But really, you look back at the last 2 seasons, and that's been a semi-regular issue there. Where is your confidence level in Alejandro Kirk being able to get back some semblance of the hitter? You know, we didn't really see much last year, but on his way up, that was what he was. He was hitterish. He had the hit tool. It's a little bizarre that the only value right now is coming from the framing and blocking.
Yeah, it's really incredible how our expectations for him have morphed in a pretty short amount of time. Look, when I came on your show on opening day, I said I was pretty bullish about Kirk, and I thought he was just a modest bounce back away from being one of the better catchers in all of baseball. And he's gone in the opposite direction offensively. There's just very little contact with authority. I mean, I think the swing decisions are generally still good, but you know, if you're not doing damage on pitches that you should be doing damage on, if you're not consistently, turning fastballs in the strike zone into base hits, you know, it's pretty easy to neutralize a hitter like that. And, you know, Kirk is doubly challenged, right? Because for him to actualize slug, like, he really has to hit the ball in the right spot, because his base running is so he's not a good base runner. I was thinking of a terrible way to put that.
Here's one. He's so, second percentile in sprint speed in all of baseball.
There you go. There you go. It's unfathomable that someone could be a worse base runner than him, but in any event, I mean, it's hard to feel good right now, because now this is an extension of what we saw last year, which is just a paucity of quality contact, certainly not hitting the ball in the air enough. And when, you know, he hits the ball on the ground, it's going to be an out. So, you know, he really hasn't done much to inspire confidence right now. And, you know, it feels like if this persists, you know, he's going to effectively become Danny Jansen's backup. It's not going to be a timeshare anymore. And moreover, you know, I think the Blue Jays are, you know, obviously if Dalton Varsho continues performing at the level he has been, you know, it'll take away some of the sting of trading away Gabriel Moreno. But again, Alejandro Kirk's emergence was part of the reason they were comfortable parting ways with Gabriel Moreno. And, you know, if Kirk ultimately devolves into, you know, a glorified backup who had one all-star caliber season, you know, that maybe will hurt a little bit more. But yeah, right now, I think it's pretty difficult to feel confident, because he's not squaring up the ball with any kind of regularity.
No, it's quite tough. And yeah, there are only a handful of guys with a lower sprint speed, and even then, I don't know, we gotta, it is hard to imagine that, like, even someone like Aloy Jimenez hasn't managed a faster sprint speed than Alejandro Kirk far. Almost nobody with a slower home to first base time as well. I believe Wilmer Flores of San Francisco is the only guy with a slower time to first base. So you really, in addition there, you know, last year he was getting some of those infield hits and something like that. Those ones that, like, they're not necessarily good hits, but hey, maybe this can get him going. Maybe this breaks through or whatever. There was a point early last year where he had, like, nothing but infield hits because he had, you know, he had no extra base hits for that really extended run like he started this season on. So that's tough. At least there is somewhat of a solution in-house to that, and it's to change the timeshare between Alejandro Kirk and Danny Jansen to goose the offense. It's not as if Danny Jansen is a bad defensive catcher anyway, so you could, you know, start to nudge the playing time in that direction. Something that there is a less obvious solution for other than waiting it out is the fact that the top of the order has continued to struggle. We got an 0-for-8 again yesterday from George Springer, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Bo Bichette. There was a walk in there for Vlad, but it was basically when Cole Ragans was slipping all over the mound and couldn't find the strike zone for a little bit there. I pulled the numbers. Our pal Andrew Stoughton had tweeted out wondering what these numbers might be. So I pulled them. And if you look at teams 1, 2, 3 positions in the batting order, the Jays ranked 19th in OPS, which is actually a little higher than I maybe would have expected. There are a couple games in there where, you know, Justin Turner hit in the top three instead, et cetera. But either way, even if 19th is higher than maybe I expected, it's not a good place. It's not a good spot to be for the top third of your order. We could talk about these guys individually, but as a group, you know, I we get a lot of questions to the text line, or Blair and Barker get them on Jay's Talk. What about moving this guy down in the order? What about changing this in the order? When the top three guys in your order are all struggling, doesn't really, like, you're not going to move all three of them down to 5, 6, 7, 6, 7, 8 and have your part-time players at the top of the order. Do you have anything better solution-wise other than these guys just got to hit better?
No, man. I mean, I tweeted this out the other day. I said, trying to figure out ways to optimize the Blue Jays lineup has a distinct rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic feel. Like, there is no solution to the core guys, the best hitters in your lineup, not hitting. And just to add a little more context to that stat that you pulled, it does account for the fact that Justin Turner hit multiple home runs in days where he was sitting in the three spot. And moreover, Davis Schneider got a few at-bats where he delivered extra base hits, hitting, I believe, in the leadoff spot as a pinch hitter. So if you look at just what George Springer, Bo Bichette, and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. have contributed while hitting 1, 2, 3, their WRC plus collectively drops to 94. Ugh. That is simply unacceptable for three players of that caliber, perennial all-stars, to be, you know, collectively below league average hitters. And you know, that's the thing, is that, like, you know, John Schneider doesn't really have any aces up his sleeve. There's nothing he can do other than wait for his best players to start performing like his best players. And, you know, with respect to Vlad and Bo, you expect that, you know, you extend the sample and the production is going to be there. I got to be honest, I'm pretty concerned about George Springer at the moment. He's 34 years old. This is his second straight season of considerable decline. And I mean, just from what we can observe, he just doesn't look all that good. Like, he is never, you know, really, I don't want to say never, like, he does have 3 home runs on the season, but his most recent home run was his first in April, and it's April 26th. And, you know, for the season, you look at the batted ball metrics, they are all extremely disquieting. You look at hard hit rate, you look at average exit velocity, they are by far the worst of his career. You look at maximum exit velocity, which is a pretty good proxy for raw power, it's by far the worst of his career. And you know, it's to be expected that a 34-year-old would, you know, continue declining. But at this point now, over his last 800 roughly plate appearances, he's got a sub 400 slug. He's got an OBP below 330. That's just not sufficient production for a leadoff hitter on a team that's trying to be, you know, a World Series contender. So to reiterate, I do have a fair degree of concern about George Springer's ability to be an impact hitter at this point, but I also don't know who's a better fit for the leadoff spot. Like, the Blue Jays are just in a tough spot whereby they don't have any recourse other than hope that these guys turn around and fast.
Yeah, you know, my default with that is like, okay, who's the OBP guy? Plug a OBP guy in there. At least you're setting the table. So then you'd go, you know, maybe you go even Justin Turner, right? Even though he's also one of your better power hitters, just to get a guy on base. Maybe you go Kevin Biggio on the days he's in there. But this is the other problem, is like, a lot of the Jays lineup are guys who aren't in there every day. So then you're talking about changing the lineup every single day. And some guys value that familiarity, that role certainty. You mentioned the WRC pluses there, WRCs plus. I brought up OPS plus, and OPS plus is not, you know, we're taking on base plus slugging and we're adjusting it to league average and league context and stuff like that. So it is not an additive stat, but as a silly exercise, you could take any two of the Jays' top three hitters in their batting order, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., George Springer, Bo Bichette, and add their OPS plus together, and neither of them would be on the level of Shohei Ohtani or Mookie Betts, who the Dodgers have both of them playing against the Blue Jays this weekend. Shohei Ohtani has an OPS just under 1.1, and Mookie Betts is just over 1.1. The Jays' top three hitters top out at Vlad's 667. It's not a good spot to be in. Of those three, so George Springer, you know, a little bit of signs of life this week with the three-hit game, the home run, you're not buying it. Do you think it's, and there have been some people who are like, why is Vlad getting it worse? You know, Bo Bichette started the season just as bad as well. Some of that is, you know, the base running component, the what position do you play component. But in my estimation, and this is an eye test thing, not a quantitative thing, it looks like Bo is a little closer to being Bo than Vlad is to being peak Vlad. Would you agree with that assessment?
I absolutely would. I mean, you look at Vlad's process right now, and it's pretty ugly. Like, the swing decisions, not only chase, but in-zone selectiveness, it's just not there right now. As a matter of fact, he's rocking the highest strikeout rate of his career. And then when he does put the ball in play, we're seeing classic Vlad. He's pounding the ball into the ground. He's not pulling the ball in the air. You know, you look at both of those statistics, they're by far the worst marks of his career. It's hard to feel, you know, bullish at the moment about Vlad's ability to get back to where he was in 2021 or even 2022. Whereas with Bo, you know, he looks more locked in. He looks more like himself. And he has these stretches where, you know, he's not necessarily racking up base hits, but he's doing his thing. He's fouling off pitches. He's, you know, driving the ball to the opposite field. And I feel like we've been seeing that from him. And you know, it's only a matter of time before those balls start dropping. Whereas for Vlad, you know, he's pounding the ball into the ground. He's not having quality at bats. He's certainly not doing damage. You look at his isolated power right now, it's 122. It's below the likes of Orlando Arcia, Bryce Tarang, Logan Ohapi. Like, these are middle infielders and catchers. And you know, Vlad is delivering less isolated power than those guys right now. So it's just been a brutal start. And what's doubly frustrating is that, you know, throughout his career, Vlad has been a very strong starter. You look at his Aprils, you know, they're consistently OPSs of almost 900. This April, he's not even at 700. Like, it's been really grim. And, you know, I think that a hot start from Vlad would have quelled a lot of sort of the simmering frustration among the fans regarding Vlad and what he is and what he means for this team. But that hasn't happened. You know, he's really gotten off to unquestionably the worst start of his career, and it couldn't have happened at a worse time.
Yeah, the batted ball stuff, again, we talked to Robert Orr of Baseball Prospectus the other day, explained what damage rate is, where we take exit velocity and launch angle and direction to try to put those to each batted ball and do, hey, how likely was this hit to do damage? So we can account for things like, yeah, you hit it hard, but you hit it on the ground. Vlad on a 4-year steady decline in that stat right now. That's not to say he can't turn it around. That is to say he has not hit like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. This year. On the other end of the batted ball side is Addison Barger, who is like break him and Aurelvis Martinez are just like, hey, do we need to recalibrate these machines at AAA? Like, these readings can't be accurate. He comes up, he has an 0-for in his debut and makes that tough play in left field, the first time he's ever playing left field in his life, by the way. But he hit the heck out of a couple of those balls, even put a pitcher on the IL with a comebacker. What do you like about Addison Barger? And I guess to a lesser extent, what do you make of this decision that, hey, he's going to have to learn left field on the fly because that's the way to get his bat in the lineup?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was pretty counterintuitive that for a team whose recipe for success is run prevention, that they would throw a kid out there in his major league debut to play a position he's never played before. But at the same time, like, they do need to inject some pop into their lineup, and that's what Addison Barger brings. I know that, you know, last year throughout the injury-riddled season, he was pounding the ball on the ground a little bit more. But, you know, certainly his hot start in AAA this year has quelled some of those concerns, right? He had like 13 extra base hits in less than 20 games in AAA. And moreover, he's cut down on the swing and miss too. Like, he had almost an even strikeout to walk ratio in AAA. And, you know, this is what this team needs. They need pop. And, you know, he's one of the few guys who could provide it. He was already on the 40-man roster. And I like them, you know, taking this shot. I think there is an opportunity to work him in a defensive position he's more comfortable with. Like, you could throw Kevin Biggio out in the corner outfield. Both of them would probably be more comfortable with that assignment. You know, Biggio may not love it, but ultimately I do think that's probably the optimal configuration. You put Barger at third, maybe have Clement or IKF at second, and then Biggio in the corner outfield. But yeah, I mean, look, you're not getting offense from the guys, you know, the holdovers, the familiar faces. This is a kid who, you know, for much of his minor league career has been an impact hitter, who pulls the ball in the air, who tries to hit the ball out of the ballpark. You know, he's worth taking a shot on. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if in the not too distant future, Aurelvis Martinez got that call too, because this team is simply desperate for offense and the guys in-house aren't getting the job done right now. And they haven't been for 2 years, frankly.
Yeah, and Aurelvis Martinez looked at this Addison Barger call up and was like, well, I took that personally. He pounded another double yesterday. He continues to be, yeah, just a tremendous hitter down there with the Buffalo Bisons, hitting over 300 too. So you talk about Barger and kind of the, you know, the swing and miss improvements. Aurelvis has made some of those as well. Both of those guys are going to swing and miss at the major league level, especially when they first come up. Those are big, angry, loud swings, but that's what this lineup could use a little bit more of. Jonah, before I let you go here, Shohei Ohtani is in town this weekend. We're going to see him Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Can't imagine many people blame Shohei Ohtani specifically for him deciding not to sign with the Toronto Blue Jays and instead going to the Los Angeles Dodgers. How are you feeling with Shohei coming here this weekend, given where the Blue Jays are and the fact that Shohei Ohtani is somehow getting even better as a hitter?
I mean, yeah, it sure would have been cool and good for the Blue Jays to have signed Shohei Ohtani. I think even when those reports were circulating during the offseason, I don't know how close he ever was to signing with Toronto. I suspect the Blue Jays were just being used as a tool to inflate the deal that he ultimately got from the Dodgers, who were always his first pick. That was abundantly clear. Look, I mean, you can't overstate what acquiring a player like Shohei Ohtani would have done for this team. You know, he's a transformative talent, not just because of his on-field ability, but because, you know, he is a sensation who changes the scope of a franchise's ambitions and changes the range of what the possibilities are for a team. You know, it's just... Toronto has never had a player like this, because a player like this has never existed in the modern era, certainly of Major League Baseball. Like, there just aren't enough superlatives to describe how much he brings to a team. And yeah, I mean, the production that he's delivering now and has delivered for years is, you know, something that the Blue Jays desperately need. He's one of the best hitters in all of Major League Baseball. And that's what he's been doing for years now. I mean, it's ridiculous to consider that as soon as next year, he could also be back on the mound and being one of the best starters in the game. He's a freak. He's a freak. He's a superstar. He's a unicorn. And, you know, it's a real shame that the Blue Jays didn't end up with him. I don't know that they ever had that much of a shot, but, you know, it would have been cool. And, you know, I'm going to enjoy the Ohtani show this weekend, as everyone does. And, you know, you hope simultaneously he doesn't do too much damage against the Blue Jays, but he does damage against everybody. So all you can do is try to contain him.
Yeah, and oh, by the way, he hasn't even been the best hitter in his own lineup so far this year. Mookie Betts matches him in home runs, has him beat in runs, RBI, stolen bases, walks, strikeouts, average, and OBP. Shohei with a slight lead in slugging because of the doubles, but Mookie has him beat somehow almost all across the board. Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
Ohtani has 14 doubles. Nobody else in the majors has 10.
Which is, it's a wild thing because that's Freddie Freeman's gimmick. Freddie Freeman's the guy who beats everyone in the league but in doubles by like 12 or 15. And by the way, that guy is also in this lineup and has a higher OPS plus and stats like that than anyone on the Blue Jays other than Justin Turner. So it's
going to
be...
Well, on that note, sorry to interrupt.
No,
Blake.
Do you think...
Teoscar Hernandez... Yeah. Of the Los Angeles Dodgers would also lead the Toronto Blue Jays in home runs with 6.
Yeah. So. 20 RBI for Teoscar as well. 35% strikeout rate, but I would take a 75% strikeout rate right now if it came with 6 home runs and 20 runs batted in. Jonah, thanks for taking the time out, man. Enjoy this series this weekend, painful though it may be.
Always a pleasure, buddy. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, man. Jonah Bierenbaum of The Score. Make sure you're checking out his great stuff on Twitter at Bierenball, on The Score's YouTube page as well. A lot of great baseball and other video content from Jonah. We're going to take a break and take a closer look at the Dodgers side of this. We're going to talk to the voice of the Dodgers and ESPN SportsCenter anchor, Steven Nelson. He joins us next as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. Jays back in action. No rainouts. Today, no rainouts this weekend, no rainouts for 6 in a row at least because we have a dome here. Hopefully it's open sometime soon, but we got a 7:07 start down at Rogers Center. Shohei's here. The Dodgers are here. Dan, Buck, Hazel, and Emily on the TV side for you. Ben and Chris on the radio side. On the Dodgers side, you might know our next guest's voice if you're tuning into some out-of-market baseball. You probably know him from ESPN SportsCenter as well, formerly MLB Network, NHL Network. It's Steven Nelson, play-by-play voice of the Dodgers. He joins us now. Steven, thanks for taking the time out, man. How are you?
Man, it's great to hear you. Great to see you this time. I mean, it's been a couple years, but when we didn't have this multi-platform distribution going. Blake, how you living, man?
I'm good, man. I'm excited for this weekend. And you're right. Last time we had you on the show, you were at MLB Network. You were doing some of the Apple TV Friday games. Now you're the you know, one of the play-by-play voices for the Dodgers. I know that's been a huge moment for you career-wise, a huge move. Can you take us through a little bit of the process of, you know, getting that gig and how it's been for you the last year and a half?
Yeah, it came out of nowhere, man. It really did. You know, when we talked during that Apple year, that ended up being a pretty, I'd say, tough season, if I'm being honest, personally or professionally anyway. And it got to the point where I was just like, I don't know that I'm going to be doing play-by-play anymore. I think, you know, I might just stick to studio hosting or calling hockey because, you know, that's what I was doing at NHL Network, calling the World Juniors for them in the States. And love and miss doing that sport, to be honest. And then the Dodgers called out of nowhere, and I asked them if they had the wrong number or if they were looking for somebody else. They assured me that they were interested in bringing me on their broadcast team. I asked them why again. in seriousness, it was just, you know, one of those things. The stars, the universe aligning for me. You know, I'm from Southern California. I was, you know, born and raised south of Los Angeles. And I gotten to the point in my life where I didn't think I was ever going back home. You know, everything in this sports media world is sort of the epicenter is the East Coast and the Eastern Standard Time Zone. And I just thought, all right, I guess I'm putting roots down here. So one, to be back home around my family again, who I was removed from for a decade, and around my friends, and then also work for an organization like the Los Angeles Dodgers. I mean, it was like the dreams didn't even cover this. It was just not within my thought process at all. So it's been a whirlwind and one heck of a ride, and again, I'm just along for it. I'm riding coattails at this point.
Well, it's been awesome. I'm glad that that has worked out for you. I'm glad as a fan of yours, as someone who watches a lot of Dodgers baseball, that has worked out. And oh, by the way, then shortly after, a player that you know very well, in Shohei Ohtani, comes and signs with the Dodgers. So for anyone who doesn't know, you're the only Asian American play-by-play voice in the league on a full-time basis. When Shohei was awarded an award from a commissioner's office, you dusted off some of the Japanese that you know to speak to him and present to him in Japanese. Obviously in our roles, there's always like the media player separation to some degree, but how exciting was that for you that, you know, hey, Shohei Ohtani, the face of Japanese baseball, the face of baseball who happens to be from Japan, is now also on the team that you're doing play-by-play for?
So I'll have to go back just to kind of give context for how I was feeling about it, because through my life as a sports fan, and I think a lot of people, and dare I say, especially in Toronto, can relate, I am pessimistic by nature. So when good things happen, it feels even better. You know, like I do not want to think that the good thing is going to happen, because then when it doesn't, then I'm even more crushed. So that's how I got through my sports fandom life. So then you cut to this free agency. And for the last year prior, everyone was saying, Shohei Ohtani's going to be a Dodger. Shohei Ohtani's going to be a Dodger. And I'm saying to them, I was like, guys, like, stop. Don't do this. Like, you're putting it out there. You're kind of messing with the energy and the vibes in the universe. Like, now, you know, the more you say it, the less likely it's going to happen. And then that ill-fated or ill-reported day back in December plays out, and I'm thinking, all you guys, it's all your fault. This is why it's happening. He's going to go to Toronto now. And I mean, that whole day was wild, obviously. And so when it came to be that he was going to join the Dodgers, obviously I was ecstatic, but there was a couple hour stretch where I was just inhaling copium. Like, it's fine. It's fine. They'll be able to repurpose the funds, and they'll figure it out, and it's okay. It's all right. And then I was like, dang, you know, I'm kind of bummed, you know, because like doing a job like this, like one, it's certainly more fun if you have a competitive team. And then, you know, that goes to the nth degree when you add in the greatest talent we've seen in our lifetime. So it's been great to watch him play. And yes, him being this global superstar from Japan, me being Japanese, I definitely have a lot more family and friends, you know, bugging me for tickets back home, but it's all in good fun.
Yeah, that's a component of it for sure. And look, obviously this season has started off with some non-baseball things around Shohei with the Ippei situation. I won't ask you about that. I mean, it's been especially well covered at this point. But when you get past that, when you then look, it's like, oh, did it affect Shohei on the field? How's he doing, by the way? Oh, he's become even better as a hitter somehow. He's lapping the league in doubles. His OPS plus is up around 200. So he's producing at double the level of an average hitter. Him and Mookie as a 1-2 is crazy. How is this player continuing to up the bar for what we expect from, like, we already know, okay, we're never going to see a player like this again. Probably nobody has pitched like this and hit like this. And now he's doing this season as a DH only, and he's somehow pushing it even further as a hitter.
Yeah, Blake, I don't know. I don't think anybody that is a normal human like us can answer that question, because who knows what planet he's actually from. Look, in my previous job at MLB Network, getting to meet and cover Shohei a little bit, and then having called some of his games previous to his time with the Dodgers, and then doing World Baseball Classic games in Tokyo when he returned to his home country, which was unbelievable. I always say, forget all the tools on the field, right? His ability to demolish baseball. He leads the league in hard hits. His elite speed. People don't realize how fast he is at his size, elite size. And then you factor in the pitching thing, which he's doing this offensively while rehabbing his right arm, by the way. He's like taking steps in his throwing program. Remove all of that. Remove all the off field revenue generator, like the being face of brands and all that. Shohei's greatest tool is here. Because, and I'm pointing to my head for those listening on the radio, but it's between the ears, his ability to control each moment at his own pace as a competitive athlete is unlike anything we've ever seen. His ability to compartmentalize and focus on the task at hand, keeping the main thing, it truly is unbelievable because of the things that you alluded to that have played out over the first couple weeks of the season. I mean, just try to put yourself in that situation with someone you perceive to be your closest friend or a close family member and what that must feel like. And you have to go to work the next day and perform. Well, I mean, it would be tough for any of us to just put one foot in front of the other without tripping, right? So for him to get up and lead the league in batting average, I mean, like you said, he has found another way to get better. It really is hard to comprehend, but that is his superpower, is his ability to just lock in with a slow heartbeat. That doesn't mean he won't fail, right? His on-base streak ended yesterday at 22 games. His hitting streak ended yesterday at 9. But it is still he's just operating on different wavelengths from everybody else.
It's pretty incredible. And this is a Dodgers team that, you know, they weren't off to the best of starts. There's a lot of pitching injuries, but they've started to turn it on here. They've won 4 in a row. And look, this is going to be the way they're shaped up and the way their injured list looks right now on the pitching side. This is going to be an offense fueled team. And it's pretty remarkable. Shohei is the most fascinating and incredible baseball player I've ever seen and probably ever will see. And then there is a guy hitting one spot ahead of him in the lineup who has moved from the outfield to the middle infield and is bouncing between shortstop and second base, who has a slightly higher on base than Shohei right now, a few more RBI, an extra stolen base. Mookie Betts has arguably been even better than Shohei to start the season right now. And Freddie Freeman is hitting behind those guys off to what you would consider a cold start for him. And he would be the best hitter on the Blue Jays so far this year by a mile. I guess, and this is also a team that has 6 guys who are in the lineup every day who are really hitting the ball already here, including our old friend Teoscar Hernandez. Look, they're going to probably have to address the starting pitching at some point between now and the trade deadline, given the number of injuries that they've had. But this offense, you know, it's clicking enough already that it can probably carry them where they need to go, at least until playoff time, right?
Yeah, no. So I think what we've seen this first month for the Dodgers is that the key for the lineup is the bottom of the order, because mm-hmm. it's that old adage in sports, right? You look across the lines and you look at the other team and you're like, okay, who do we not want to let beat us? And so for the Dodgers, it's easy to say, all right, don't let Mookie beat you. Okay, also don't let Shohei beat you. And then don't let Freddie beat you. And then, oh, by the way, you might have the best catcher in baseball behind all three of them and Will Smith batting 4th. Don't let him beat you either. So then 5 through 9, what are you going to get? And I think you can objectively say that the Dodgers, there's a lot of swing and miss, including your old friend Teoscar Hernandez. And Teo's had a really solid start in his first season as a Dodger. But, you know, Max Muncy, Teoscar Hernandez, James Altman, a second-year center fielder who had the most strikeouts in a single season last year for the Dodgers. Really good player, but that is a part of his game. You have another rookie just called up in Andy Pajes, who looks like he's going to be here to stay. He's got some slug from the right side, but you know, there is some swing and miss. And then you have your typical hitters that you would plug in around them at the bottom of the order that have also struggled to get it going. So when you watch a Dodgers game, you kind of know what you're going to get 1 through 4. 5 through 9 has been the question. And during this 4-game winning streak, 5 through 9 has been there. And so that's kind of, you know, that validates the point. You mentioned injuries to the pitching staff, like those happen for every team. And the hope for the Dodgers is that a lot of those guys who are super talented get back healthy. They're missing some big pieces in the back end of the bullpen right now, Blake Treinen and Bruce Dar-Gratterall. But, you know, bullpens are bullpens. It's the most volatile position in the sport, and that tends to sort itself out. But, if I'm being honest and objective and trying to find the hole to poke in this team, it would be the lineup and the the amount of swing and miss, which is something that, you know, the Jays, the team that they're going to see these next 3 days, they don't have a lot of, but the Jays have struggled to get going elsewhere with the bats.
Yeah.
Which is weird. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, of course.
Because of this is a second straight year of regression offensively with a lineup that has George Springer, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Bo Bichette, it's sort of hard to fathom. And it seems like from afar, the volume on the conversation of what are you going to do with this core moving forward, it's getting louder. So where is Toronto at? Where are Jays fans at with this core that was supposed to take him back to the golden era for the first time since Touch 'Em All Joe?
Yeah, nervous and urgent, I think. And you know, the Shohei thing is fascinating from this past offseason because, you know, when we all sat here at the end of the Blue Jays season, laid out what the offseason could look like, Shohei wasn't a part of that conversation. Nobody here really thought that Shohei was a realistic possibility initially. So you've got, hey, here's what it could look like, and it's kind of underwhelming, so you better get some internal improvement, but you also better, you know, hit on who you replace Matt Chapman with, hit on who you replace Kevin Kiermaier and Brandon Belt with. And then the Shohei thing happens and everyone's expectations go crazy. Then what ends up happening is not only did they not get Shohei Ohtani, but that very modest offseason plan that we had all talked about at the offseason, at the end of the season rather, even that was a little underway. Kevin Kiermaier comes back. Everyone's happy to have him back, but he's probably at a point now where he should be moving into more of a part-time role. You know, the Matt Chapman spot is filled by Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, good clubhouse guy, good versatility, but is not going to have a month where he hits like Matt Chapman at all this season. Right. So there were, you know, on paper, they were a little less offensively. The front office talked about doubling down on believing in their guys, whether that's because they believe in it or they had no other choice. It's been a tough start in that regard. You know, George Springer is 34, and there were some bat speed question marks last year that have only persisted. Now he's had an okay week here, had a 3-hit game, jumping on fastballs, hit a home run a couple games back. So maybe there's some hope that can turn around, but we know guys' bat speed don't pick back up at 34, at 35. I think Bo Bichette's probably the guy most people are confident in getting it back just because, you know, the shortstop defense has become solid and he's been a streaky guy forever. The toughest one is obviously Vlad, where in 2021, he was right behind Shohei in American League MVP voting. And he has not hit like that guy. He has not hit like anything close to that guy since. And he has the exit velocities and things like that. But if we look at something like damage rate, it's on a 4-year decline. He's striking out a little bit more. The walk rate's up, but it's, you know, the selective aggression maybe isn't there. And that's where some of this walking is coming from. It's tough because once a guy shows you he can be number two on an MVP ballot, it's really hard to give that up. But it's also hard, you know, Vlad and Bo are a year and a half from free agency. It's really hard to talk about what a next contract would look like. So I think the conversation has started to shift to and will continue to shift to, hey, there's a year and a half left here. The pitching staff is really, really good, but you signed a bunch of guys in their 30s to contracts that are coming up in the next year or two. There's got to be a big level of urgency right now, and that might mean making some hard decisions on the fly here as we get closer to trade deadline season, if that makes sense as an explanation.
No, it really does. Because I just trying to put myself in the seat of a Jays fan, like I'd be nervous because of that timeline that you mentioned. It's like, you know, a year and a half ago, you're saying, all right, hey, you know, let these guys write the checks. Like, whatever you got to do to make them Jays for life, and then, you know, as it happens in this sport, you know, some regression, some adjustments to the adjustments. And then you're thinking, wait a second, what is this player's future? What is their true value? We don't really know yet. And that's really hard to do when you have a team that you feel it should be competitive. You want to be competitive in the toughest division in the sport. So I'm very, very anxious, excited to see how this series plays out. You know, I know they're coming in after a tough series in KC, but whenever you get to watch talents like this, you know, that again, that gives you some extra energy. But I'd be lying if I said I wasn't concerned along with Jays fans for what we're seeing right now.
Yeah, and it's a fascinating thing because you mentioned, you know, Shohei's mental tool, right, and his ability to adjust the things and add new layers. And it's fascinating to watch him do that. But he's doing that while he's at a very high level. And it is like intellectually a really interesting thing to see super talented players struggle and have to figure it out. Like that is a rewarding part of baseball. It's one of the coolest. Hey, you broke out and then the pitchers saw this and then they adjusted to you and now you've got to adjust back. And do you have the talent level to adjust back? It's one of the coolest things about the sport that we cover. But when the top three hitters in your lineup are all going through it at once, it gets really hard to see the, you know, to take the positives from that and appreciate that process.
Definitely. And if you are a young player like those guys, let's just look at Vlad and Bo specifically, like you're coming up in this age of social media. It is damn near impossible to escape the noise around that. You know what your potential is. You know what people think you should be signing for your next contract like that. Like these guys, these are still kids. I mean, in the grand scheme, and it's only human for them to think like that. And so, you know, that's another part of it too. But the fact that we're coming into this series and look, old friend Justin Turner, he is a forever a legend in the Dodgers organization, and he is off to a terrific start. But that is not good for the Jays that he has been the best hitter for them. Like for them to go where they want to go, it's got to be those two big horses. I'm glad Dalton's swinging it better.
Yeah.
Because last year I was like, that's not Dalton Varsho. So this is that's really encouraging at least. And the Jays are one of those teams that, and maybe it's because of my friendship with Adnan Burke, the Jays are one of those teams where I got a soft spot for, and you know, I like to see him do well. So you know, hopefully it's a fun series. I'm also jacked up to be here while the Leafs are.
Yeah, I was gonna ask that next. Yeah. Does your Adnan Burke friendship and your affinity for Toronto, I know you called Chicago games, they're nowhere near the playoffs. Are you putting your chips behind the Leafs here?
Yeah, man, come on. Like, I am, when it comes to hockey, what we know, I did work for the Hawks for a handful of games. Like, I am like just a fan of the sport overall, and especially this time of year. And it's so much more enjoyable when you don't have emotional investment, because every year takes years off your life. But just to see the buzz in this, I know, like, hopefully the forecast cooperates, like the outdoor watch parties, because those look electric. You know, seriously, everybody on our crew traveling with the Dodgers is like, hey, what, we're going to watch the Leafs and Bees play. Even non-hockey fans are like, hey, like, you know, they're non-hockey fans are like, hey, like, how do you think we can get tickets? And we're like, you're an idiot. No, that's the stupidest question you could possibly ask.
Yeah. No, your best bet is to leave Saturday's game early, walk down Bremner to where the watch parties are, and just get there hours and hours early. That's the closest any of us are going to get to being inside that arena.
Yeah, 100%. Hey, and while I have a moment, you know, we talk about, you know, broadcasting games, mm-hmm. and whether baseball or hockey, but with hockey specifically, we have to, you know, I'm sure you guys have done it throughout the last couple of days, but you know, sending our best to the loved ones of Bob Cole, because you know they're to steal that quote from The Sandlot, right? Heroes get remembered, legends never die, and that is a true legend, a true icon. Of the sport, of the business, and he meant a lot to a lot. So, you know, just wanted to pay my respects to Bob Cole.
Well said, Stephen, and really appreciate that. Really appreciate you taking the time. I'll see you down at the park shortly. We getting a Shohei BP this weekend, you think?
Man, you know, so when I did a game in 2018 for MLB Network, he did take BP on the field, okay. And he hit one into the upper tank at Rogers Center. I walked up there to take a picture from it. I was like, how is this? What did he like? I don't get it. So I wonder if he will. You know, he is definitely like, he has a feel for putting on a spectacle and a show. I wonder if, because of what happened in the offseason, like just out of respect, like he does not want to cause a scene about it. He was asked in his availability a couple of days ago about Toronto, and he was just like, you know, I've said some nice things about the organization, but did not want to get into the specifics because he's just wired that way. So I wonder, on one hand, I'm like, man, maybe he might want to show out for the fans who come for BP. On the other, he might say to himself, I'll just continue to do my work down below in the cage and not cause too much of a ruckus.
Show out for the media. Come on, let me see it. Steven, I'll see you down at the park shortly. Thanks so much for taking the time, man.
Hey, but you guys are the best. Anytime. Great to be with you again.
Steven Nelson, play-by-play voice of the Dodgers, also ESPN SportsCenter anchor. Great guy. Looking forward to catching up with him down at the park. It is Chris Bassitt against Gavin Stone tonight. I had a lot of Gavin Stone stuff for you. You'll have to wait for the broadcast and see that. Tyler Glasnow tomorrow. I'll be on Blue Jays Central to talk a lot about that fastball and that Giannis-like stride down the mound at 6'8". It's Bassitt against Stone at 7 o'clock today. Kikuchi Glasnow tomorrow at 3. Gausman on Sunday against a TBD. Have a great weekend, everyone. Jeff Merrick Show is next.